Welcome to the Wedding Guest Extraordinaire podcast with me, Sarah Southern. Join me each week as I talk everything weddings, taking you from engagement to honeymoon, and making sure that you really do enjoy planning your big day. Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Wedding Guest Extraordinaire podcast with me, Sarah Southern. I'm really excited as this week I'm joined by my really lovely friend Bryony, who got married to Paddy in 2012. Now, Bryony's wedding was perhaps a little, or wedding experience rather, was perhaps a little different to others in that unfortunately her father sadly died about a month before Paddy proposed. And then in the year that they were planning the wedding, Paddy was admitted to hospital as he was not very well, and also Paddy's mum unfortunately was very ill. So what they had been planning ended up having to change. They ended up having two weddings, one that was a very small, intimate family affair, and then a much larger party later in the year. Bryony's been really, really honest and open about her experience of having such challenges thrown at her while she was planning her wedding. And I really hope, and I know that Bryony hopes as well, that this is perhaps helpful to people who are going through a similar situation. Sadly, when you are planning really beautiful family occasions, such sadness can sometimes happen. So please do take a listen, and I really do hope you enjoy it.
Hi, Bryony. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for coming to chat to me about your wedding.
You're welcome.
So you've been married for, what, 5 years now? I think it's 5.5 years.
I think it's coming up 6 years. Yes, coming up 6 years. And is it? We were married in 2012.
Flown by.
Yeah.
So let's start at the very beginning. You and Paddy had been dating for a little while. Let's say...
about 8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
And then eventually he got round to proposing. Do you want to tell me about the proposal?
The proposal. So he mentioned when we'd been together for about 2 years that maybe we might want to get married. So, you know, he'd put it out there. But then getting around to actually proposing took a while. So he had planned to propose to me eventually around about Christmas. Unfortunately, my dad died very suddenly at the beginning of December. And so he didn't have the chance to ask my dad for his blessing. But he did ask my mum. And he was going to do it on Christmas Eve, I think, planned. But then all our Christmas plans changed, blah, blah, blah. So on New Year's Eve, we were together. And he made a big thing about us, you know, oh, let's have a nice dinner and let's get dressed up. And he put his cravat on.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, because he made me buy him a cravat a few years earlier. Don't know why, but he did. And we had a nice dinner. And then he pulled out his guitar. He gave me a stocking. He gave me the stocking to open my presents, and then at the bottom of the stocking was a little kind of ring box shaped present, and he said, hang on, don't open that one yet. And he pulled out his guitar and he sang me a song which he'd composed, which the verse was, will you marry me? So I said yes, obviously, and the ring was a ring that he'd made out of a guitar string.
It's very thoughtful.
Yeah.
Because I remember you then came round to Laura's house, who listeners will remember from episode one, and me, Ben and Laura, and I think so maybe some other people there, and you told us, and we basically died of excitement.
Yeah, I think you screamed, and Callum, who was only about a year at the time, our baby, burst into tears.
Yes, he did. He did, but we were just all too excited. It was an emotional time, and it was an emotional time, as unfortunately your father sadly passed away at the beginning of December.
Yeah.
And it must have been so difficult for you at that time to then go from such sadness to such happiness with Paddy finally asking. But I did feel so sad for Paddy that... he'd obviously be wanting to do the surprise. And then life, as it does, moves everything in a totally different direction. But yeah. I think it was really lovely that he still asked your mum.
Yeah, I think she gave him a bit of stick. Said, maybe you should have done this earlier, eh?
Well, but, yes, that argument could be made.
Yeah. And he said, for that I will be eternally not grateful, regretful. But yeah, I think it was, at the time I was a little bit worried about doing it because I wasn't sure I felt like getting ready for a wedding and all the rest when obviously we were grieving. But it was actually the best thing that could have happened because it gave us something to focus for, and my mum particularly, and you know, it gave us something to plan for, like a nice family thing to happen. So it was, yeah, it worked out.
No, it was. It was, I think, a nice piece of news during a very challenging time for everybody. So you've got your guitar string ring, which sounds a bit peculiar, but it was actually very nice. Well, I don't think it's survived the test of time, has it?
Turned my finger a bit green
yes.
for a while, yeah.
But still very, very thoughtful. And then you started to put the plans in place for the wedding.
Yeah.
So you got married in London. Uh-huh. Was it always going to be a London wedding, or were there any other options of where you might get married?
I think we thought about maybe getting married in France, which is where my parents were living, so where my mum is living now. And my mum had been dreaming about that, putting a marquee in the garden and things like that. But actually, when we thought about the practicalities of it, of where everybody would stay and getting everybody out there, it became quite, you know, stressful. And actually I quite like the idea of just doing it in London and not making people spend hundreds of pounds to travel somewhere and all of that kind of thing. So yeah, I think quite quickly we decided we'd keep it in London.
And did you have an idea in your mind in those early days as to what kind of wedding you wanted to have? Like, were you wanting to have a big thing, or were you wanting it to be more intimate? Like, did you have those firm ideas in your mind engagement time, or was it not until further down the track that you knew exactly what it was you wanted?
I think I always wanted, I never wanted it to be a huge, big, showy affair. But I wanted, you know, all my family to be there and a few friends. I'm always one of those people that tends to not invite lots of people because I'm just not that kind of person who has a big party or does all that kind of thing. So it was never going to be a huge, I'm going to invite everybody I've ever worked with or anything like that. I only really wanted people who I was close to and, you know, were good friends. So so it was never going to be massive. But at the same time, I wanted a party. So it wasn't just going to be a tiny thing either.
No. So when you were planning your wedding, unfortunately, a few other problems made your life a bit of a challenge in 2012, and that unfortunately Paddy wasn't very well, and then even more sadly his mother wasn't very well.
Yeah.
So that kind of changed the dynamic of the way you were planning the wedding and what logistically was possible. And I think that's something that's really important when people are planning their wedding, not to be so fixated on what they absolutely want and to adapt to life, because you ended up having two services because you wanted to make sure that Paddy's mum was able to come along. So you had that in the June, which was a very kind of small, intimate family affair. Mm-hmm. And then you had the bigger wedding in September. So should we talk about the June one first and what you did for that? Because that's legally when you get married at Islington Town Hall or Hackney Town Hall.
Get it right. Yes, so, well, we always knew that we wanted to have a humanist service, partly because we weren't going to get married in church, and lots of the venues that we wanted to get married at didn't have a licence, so we could have a humanist service, which wouldn't be the legally binding thing, but therefore we'd need to do the legally binding thing at a registry office or the local town hall, which we decided to do. When Pad's mum had been ill for a long time, but when I said to her that we were thinking of having the wedding in September, she said, oh, well, I hope I just make it till then. And that, having just lost my dad, made me think, well, I don't want Pad to be going through that. You know, I don't want him to be going through that in September if that were to happen. But also I didn't want her to be worrying about it. So we thought, well, if we'd have to have this legal ceremony, let's just have it early. Also, my mum quite liked the idea of having a small family do as a way of having a family event, which she knew she was going to be very emotional at and upset, you know, just as a small, tight-knit group first before the big party. So we decided it kind of made sense to do that early and then have a bit of time to plan the bigger thing and have it a bit later.
His emotions were running high.
Yeah, not helped obviously by the fact that Pad then spent 2.5 months in hospital, nearly dying from a heart infection. And then when you said June, the small ceremony was in June. I was like, no, 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 May. But no, it was in June because it was supposed to be in May. and it got postponed because he hadn't quite come out of hospital yet. But I still always have May as the date in my head. I always forget our anniversary because I forget that we moved it and it was in June.
The fact that you have any memory of 2012 is frankly beyond me.
My year as an EastEnders person.
There was a drum kit down the staircase on a regular basis. What cliffhanger have we got next? It was a very, very challenging year in many, many ways. But I do think that you didn't shy away from still wanting to do this really important part of your relationship with Paddy. And although you kept having these awful challenges thrown at you, you actually remained unbelievably calm. Throughout.
Yeah, there was quite a little bit of stress bubbling under the surface there.
You were like a swan.
Yeah. But yeah.
So you've decided on having your intimate family event in June, which I can totally understand, especially for your mum and for your siblings. You know, this is going to be the kind of first big event without your dad, and especially for Paddy's mum, like, you know, being as unwell as she was at that time, you know, emotions were running high. So you obviously then have this decision of, like, you're going to get married in Hackney Town Hall. Where are you going to go afterwards? So what was the format of the day?
So I kind of got my idea from a wedding that I went to.
Oh, really? Copycat. I like it.
It was a bit of a copycat. And I'm not going to tell you who, because I didn't really like the person whose wedding I went to. So I'd never want her to know that she influenced it, although she did come to the wedding, so she probably guessed. But I went to her wedding. She's somebody I worked with. So I went in the evening, and she had it at a venue in Stoke Newington, which is kind of used for filming. Mm. And I think actually at the time it was being used for Dragon's Den.
Oh, right.
So it's kind of warehousey place. Cool. And Madonna had just shot a video there, apparently.
Oh, fancy.
So it was just this really kind of bare brick, open, warehousey type space, but it had lots of like vintage artefacts in it, and they'd made it look really cool, and like loads of bare bulbs and stuff. So I kind of thought, well, actually, we are in this part of London, and you know, we have lots of venues like that. So that I quite liked. If we're going to do it in London, let's do something like that. So I spent ages calling around studios and venues and trying to find places. And I think lots of them actually couldn't get a license to stay open late and things like that. And I just and there was one place that was linked to the venue that she'd had her wedding at. And when I mentioned her name, they said, oh, yes, since we've done that, we've had so many people wanting to get married. Because I think hers was one of the first people to get married there. And at the sister venue, they were having, so she said they were fully booked and they couldn't do any more weddings this year. So I just said to her, is there anywhere else you know of that's similar to what you do? And that's when she suggested this place called The Roost.
Which is just off Kingsland Road in Hackney.
Yes, so it's on Sandringham Road. Yeah. Right at the far end of Sandringham Road, so near Amherst Road. And it's basically an old pub that they hire out for photo shoots, I think. And so bands shoot videos there, people do interior decor shoots there, so you can, you know, change the wallpaper, you can do whatever you want with it. It's got lots of cool furniture and quirky things in it. And the fact that it was a pub we quite liked, because we had thought about maybe doing it in a pub, but again, finding a pub that you like and it's not so expensive and blah, blah, blah.
Because this venue is the one that you had in September.
Yes.
And in where you had the humanist ceremony, and which we'll talk about in a moment, and then the reception. But for your June wedding, you had, after Hackney Town Hall, you'd got, had fish and chips in a pub.
That's right.
Yes. So yeah. On Victoria Park, was it?
Yes. It was a pub called the Britannia then, but since changed to the People's Park Tavern. And I don't think they hire out the room anymore, but they had a room upstairs that they hired out. And I think there were fewer than 20 of us. So it was just family and the bridesmaids, best man. And yeah, we just had fish and chips and like nice pudding and cheese, and just had like a meal up there, and that was just a nice thing to do. So we had thought about having the big party there, because it was a lovely pub with a lovely garden and all the rest. But I can't remember why we didn't. I think it ended up being a bit expensive, and it was also really big, and I was a bit worried it was going to kind of feel too big for the number of people we were going to have.
So at the Roost, it is a really, really interesting building in that it's on lots of floors and there's a little garden outside and it does have that feeling of a pub.
Yeah.
So I remember kind of going in, I don't know whether we had drinks or whatever beforehand, but then going upstairs into this beautifully laid out room that had amazing wallpaper with loads of birds on.
Oh, yeah, and the flamingos.
Including a puffin, which is my favourite bird. And that's where the service was. So you decided to have this humanist ceremony. How did you go about finding a celebrant who could actually marry you?
Went on the Humanist Society website, and I think they list people who operate in your area. And I think she was the first one I spoke to. Or I might have spoken to somebody else who wasn't available. And I spoke to her on the phone, and she was a bit balmy. I think she told me about... she was a lady in her late 70s then. She was Chinese-Australian, but had a very Queen's English...
Hey, she was very RP, wasn't she?
Very RP speech, way of speaking. But she talked about how she'd been a journalist for the BBC in the past. She'd written a book about the sex lives of mice.
What?
I've never asked her about that later, but I am sure she said that to me on the phone.
That is interesting.
And I still can't quite work out why she... Well, I don't know, that doesn't seem to make any sense with what she said later, but I'm sure she said that to me on the phone.
Because she was also the celebrant who had done Callum's christening, which was in the October, and then you got married the following September.
So that's why we...
Already had a connection with this lady.
Thanks
through
for
Callum's birthday. Now, that has just popped into my mind, because I was like, I'm sure we knew this lady before your wedding
but
day.
But that's how I found her. Yeah. Literally just calling a number.
Yeah.
And she seemed like a nice lady. And then for Callum's naming day, we went to meet her and talked things through with her, and she was a really good public speaker, and she made the day go really nicely. So we wanted to keep her in the family, as it were, and use the same person again who already knew us, and knew Callum. That's why she did the wedding.
So obviously, when you've got all of the legal stuff out of the way, when you're doing your own humanist ceremony, you can pretty much do what you want. So did you come up with lots of ideas as to how you wanted the ceremony to be and what you did want in and what you didn't want in?
Yes. There's lots of help in terms of, I think that the Humanist Society probably does this is what a wedding speech process can look like. So I think, and Leilan, the lady who we used, had a kind of her format that she tended to use. And we kind of went backwards and forwards with her. We kind of wrote a lot of it ourselves, just because we wanted it to be light and funny and, put in some personal bits in there. She had some quite strong opinions on some things, and she liked adding kind of Chinese proverbs and things like that, which I wasn't so keen on. So we kind of went backwards and forwards, but we tended to get what we wanted. So, you do have an idea of exactly how it's going to be.
And you did some really cute touches, because you've got, at the time, they're probably grown up now, such as the way that 5.5 years does this to children. But your nieces and nephews, I remember they carried up little boards saying, here comes the bride, and all these cute little...
Yeah, luckily there were four of them, so there was here comes the bride. It might have been awkward if there were five.
That was really sweet, though. And then your mum brought you in, which I thought was really, really lovely.
Yeah.
Was there singing? Did Paddy sing you a song?
Oh, Paddy's friend, but the best man, Mick, is a singer. So him and he and Tony, another guest, Tony played the guitar, and they both sang. So they sang a song. Pat and I argued quite a lot over what the song was going to be.
Did you?
Because he wanted a song which sounds beautiful, but actually it's about somebody having an affair, which,
Get the thing isn't really fitting for your wedding day.
Either you care about these things or you don't. And I was like, everyone's going to be listening to the lyrics, but I'm sure they probably wouldn't have done. But, so he sang a song, which was nice. And we managed to choose this... music that I walked into was a Nick Cave song, which I'd wanted to use in our first wedding at the town hall, but I hadn't been allowed to use it because the first line is something like, I don't believe in an establishment God, but if you do, if he does exist, then bring her into my arms, Lord. But because it uses the phrase, "Oh Lord," we weren't allowed to use it because it was seemed to be religious, even though the whole point of it was, if you listen to the lyrics, "I'm not religious, but if you are there, then bring her into my arms."
There are quite strict rules as to what you can and can't do within, effectively, a civil ceremony for marriage. And I think that is one of the wonderful things about doing your paperwork privately and then having a humanist or whatever denomination wedding you then want to have, where you can have a lot more flexibility you're doing. So after the ceremony, we then trooped downstairs to what felt like the main pub room and started on the drinks. Now, I can only assume that I started on the French martinis at breakfast time because I felt like death the following day after your wedding.
I think you started on pink drinks. I think we gave you champagne with a frozen raspberry in or
sounds right,
like that. Yeah. So I think it was pink drinks most of the way. But I don't think the French martinis came out till about 8 or 9.
Well, whenever they came out, me and Laura were drinking them like they were juice.
Well, I think everybody was, because the bar staff were trying, we ran out of vodka or we ran out of something, so they were trying to make them with whatever else there
was. Well, I can only apologise for finishing all the vodka. But it was really lovely, and you had, rather than a sit-down dinner, which obviously is often the de rigueur at these do's, you kind of had substantial bowl food, which I felt was really nice, because it meant that people could still keep chatting no matter where they were sitting or perching, standing, whatever they were doing, or smoking outside, which was really, really lovely. And then I guess at some point we must have then toddled back upstairs for speeches.
So that was pretty early on. That was after the drinks. So we had the ceremony, did drinks, and then we toddled upstairs for speeches. I think the ushers were there to clear all the chairs away, and then we went back up for the speeches.
You gave a speech.
I did, although one of my bridesmaids, who was pregnant at the time, so she puts it down to being having a little bit of baby brain.
Secretly pregnant.
Sure, no, she told us.
Oh, had she?
That morning, yeah.
But I don't think she was having many people.
Oh, was she not? Oh.
She said to me, "I am pregnant, but nobody's supposed to know."
Well, she told everyone, so I think
Also, didn't matter. She'd come over from America. We weren't going to be like, keep the secret. So we were going to tell everyone in London, but nobody in the States.
Well, I gave her my speech that I'd written that morning, and we discovered we never knew where it was, and then we got home the next day, and she'd left it on the chair in the front room.
Bless her. She was a bit upset about it.
She was, I know, bless her. And it was absolutely fine. Luckily, because I had written it that morning, I remembered it, so it was fine. But I think I did go a little bit bridezilla getting stressed about it. But it was fine.
And your mum did a really lovely speech.
She did.
Did Paddy do a speech? Or did he sing?
No, Paddy spoke.
I just assume that Paddy sings in every situation.
No, he didn't actually sing at our wedding. No, I don't think he did. Maybe at Callum's naming day. No, he did a speech, which, you know, he finds that kind of thing quite trying. So that was nice. He did really well. And the best man gave a speech where he revealed to everyone that Pad had been a Dungeons and Dragons geek when he was younger.
Crumbs, yes, this is coming back to me now, yes. It was all very lovely. So, speaking of bridesmaids who forget speeches, to bring it for you, you had 4 bridesmaids.
Yeah.
Now, I remember selecting the dresses for your bridesmaids was quite a challenging experience. I think you had quite a specific idea, but you couldn't quite find exactly what you wanted in the shops.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's quite hard. But I was really lucky in the end. I didn't want to spend a lot of money, but I wanted to pay for my bridesmaids' dresses. I probably was copying the royal wedding when I decided that I wanted them to wear white.
I think bridesmaids in white look really nice.
Well, and also I knew I had an idea of what I wanted the flowers to be like, and I wanted them to be, because it was September, like autumnal hydrangeas, and I thought that would look nice against white. So I wanted them to be kind of white and lacy. So I did look at lots of places. And finally, Marks and Spencer's came up trumps.
Sometimes the high street has everything you need.
I know. They did really well. And the brides all liked bridesmaids. All at least said they liked them, but they all looked lovely in them.
No, they did. It worked. It worked very, very well. So I think we should talk about your dress, because obviously you had 2 dresses. You had the dress that you wore in June.
Yeah, I was very greedy.
I think that's more than acceptable. The dress that you wore in June had, I would say, a kind of 50s, 60s vibe to it.
Yeah, 50s.
Quite short.
Yeah.
And did you wear a kind of like a little fascinator hat?
I wore a fascinator that I bought from John Lewis for like 12 quid.
Amazing. I love it. And that was white.
That was white. And then I picked up the shoes from Marks and Spencer's again for $19.99.
This is proof that you can do your wedding outfit absolutely on a budget. And the dress that you wore back in June was actually made by a company called Maids to Measure, I think it was called.
That's right, yeah.
Which is where we were getting our bridesmaid's dress for Laura's wedding.
Exactly.
And they just did that style in white for you for that. And again, I believe was under 200 quid for that dress.
Yeah, I think it was about 150 or something. Yeah, yeah.
So in some ways, you proved that you can look absolutely chic and beautiful as a bride for under 300 quid.
Yeah. I tried really hard to get a high street dress. I didn't want to spend lots of money on either dresses. But being quite tall and quite hippie... Not
peace and love, man.
Not peace and love, hippie. I have large hips.
Yeah.
I just couldn't find anything that was going to be long enough for a start. If I wanted a long dress for the big wedding, or that just didn't quite suit.
And then the outfit that you wore on the September wedding, which you and your mum bought together.
Yeah.
Talk me through that.
So, I can't even remember the people who made it. This is awful. But I must have gone through like loads of wedding blogs and wedding websites and all the rest and came upon a website for these people who make dresses to measure. And I think they generally, it's not always wedding dresses. They make lots of dresses for women who go to Ascot and things like that, and evening dresses. And I think that's what I wanted. I wanted an evening dress style wedding dress. They had one that had a kind of a cowl back, so low at the back, and it had beads that you could attach to the shoulders, so I could go all sparkly razzmatazz in the evening, and I think it had beads on the back, and it was a kind of nice flowing silk dress, silk number. So I think they kind of changed it slightly for me from this dress that I'd seen that they did, so that I could have this kind of more than one outfit. And I had a cape made as well. So I started the ceremony with the cape. The cape came off after ceremony. And then in the evening, I think maybe when the French martinis came out, I added the jewels so that it was more of an eveningy thing. And I had a little cloche, like a little hat as well, that I had until the evening. And then I took that off as well. So it was kind of quite nice that it was an outfit that kind of progressed through the day.
And you looked $1 million. It was so beautiful. And your makeup looked wonderful, and your hair looked wonderful.
My makeup bloody should have looked wonderful, because that makeup artist arrived like 2 hours before she,
oh, really?
She was going to, and I was stuck to that seat for 5 hours. We couldn't leave.
Being painted in.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we've talked about the fact that you've got little Callum. You've obviously now got another child. But at the time, Callum would have been, crumbs, a year and a half in the wedding in September?
By September he was about that, yeah.
So what was it like having your own child at your wedding? Because, you know, I don't think any of our friends have had children at their weddings so far that I can think of.
No, have they? No, you're right. No, I think, yeah, we were the ones who lived in sin for a bit.
I wouldn't call it living in sin, I'd call it living in the modern day, living in reality. How was it to, you know, incorporate Callum into the day? Because I'm trying to think where he was when you walked down the aisle. I don't think you had him in your arms. Was he with Paddy?
No, he was with us. He arrived with us. So when we were getting ready in the morning, he was with us. And then I think he was given to Uncle Toby to bring my brother to bring into ceremony to sit with his dad, maybe?
Yeah.
And then he was handed over to Mum when we came in. I'm not even sure if we really thought it all through. It just kind of happened. I think in terms of the venue, I probably did think things like, oh, well, I know, like, the place we were at had lots of stairs and there were the bits of the banisters weren't there, so we kind of made sure they got that sorted because we knew there were going to be kids and things like that we had to think about.
But there was lots of space because you did invite children to the wedding.
Yeah.
And there was lots of space for them to run around.
Yeah.
And because there was quite a few children, they kind of kept themselves to themselves.
Yeah, exactly. They were entertained. I mean, funnily enough, I said to everybody that kids were welcome, but because it was a London wedding, it was a lot easier for people to, like, leave their kids at home, or, you know, get a babysitter or something like that. So most people didn't bring their kids. So most of the kids there were kind of my family, my nieces and nephews. But they all had a great time. They all, you know, ran around, like you said, and played. And I kind of was able to kind of leave Callum to family and friends. And I remember at one point the bridesmaids going, we're just giving Callum some tea because I'm not sure he's eaten. Is that right? I'm just gonna, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's great. Thanks.
The poor child is starving.
Because, yeah, I was, you know, otherwise a little bit busy.
And did Callum come on the honeymoon with you?
Yeah, he did.
Where did you go on honeymoon?
We went to Greece. We went to Mykonos.
Oh, nice.
It was nice in October. It was only after I'd booked it that I really read up on, you know, Party Island that it was supposed to be, and big gay partying scene. Luckily, it wasn't really like that in October. It was just chilled out, and that's what we wanted. Yeah, we had a lovely time. Callum did fall over 30 seconds after entering our accommodation, banged his head on a big kind of stone table, and like a massive egg came up on his head. So we immediately ran out and got the man to drive us to the hospital. But then she said he was fine. So, you know, after that, it was fine.
Good way to start your honeymoon. And if you were to reflect back on that day in September, is there anything that you wish you'd done differently or wished you could relive again?
In terms of what I wished I'd done differently, I wish I'd invited more people. I think I was worried about I'm one of those people who's like, oh, but I don't know them very well. I don't know if I should invite them or not. I just should have invited people that, you know, it would have been nice to have had there. And there were people I worried about making them feel obliged to come. Whereas I should have just thought, if they don't want to come, that's fine. They just won't come. So, yeah, I think I should have invited more people. I mean, it was still a good number. But yeah, there are definitely people I kind of wish could have been there. And actually, we had plenty of food and we had plenty of booze and we could have catered for more people. In terms of what I would like to relive, all of it.
That's a good answer. I like that. And other than having perhaps one of the most challenging years of your life personally, is there anything that you would change in the planning process of the wedding? You wish, oh, I wish I'd known that, or I wish I'd been a bit more efficient with this and it would have made everything a little bit easier?
One thing about how stressful the year was actually made me realise that you didn't have to stress too much about it. We did a lot of the planning at the last minute. So I'd contacted a photographer before Pad got ill, and then he got ill and I, you know, forgot all about it. And then it was about 6 weeks before the wedding that I got back in touch with her and said, "You still free?" And she was, and it was fine. That, you know, the flowers I arranged the week before. So actually, there are certain things that you don't have to get too stressed about. They will be fine. There are plenty of things that you can do, not last minute. If you've got an idea of what you want, great, and an idea of where you're going to go, great, but you don't have to have it all sorted the year before.
I think you also need to enjoy the process.
Yeah.
And there's no point getting overly stressed about having the right photographer or the right band or the right DJ or crumbs, even the perfect bridesmaid's dress. There will be other challenges that come along in the way, therefore just kind of go with the flow and it'll be all right on the day.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, you will get stressed.
All
you
can say,
you don't need to get stressed. No, you don't need to, but you will.
Well, because it's a big moment.
But, yeah, exactly. And you want it to be, and you do want it to be right. But as long as you have an element of, it will be lovely, I know it will, and it doesn't, you know, that I might not get exactly that, but it'll still be lovely. And as long as I get most of what I want, then...
Yeah. And all your friends and family are going to be there enjoying in those moments of love. So what more could you want?
As long as you've got the French martinis going, you'll be all right.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Bryony. That's been really lovely. And I look forward to the next wedding anniversary. So there we have it, Bryony and Paddy's wedding. I do hope you enjoyed listening to that.
I think there's a lot to take from Bryony's experience. You know, it was a very difficult time for her to have lost her father and then also be going through this exciting and joyous experience of planning her wedding, and then for her fiancé to end up in hospital whilst his mother was also ill. You know, there were so many emotions pulling her in so many different directions. But she adapted and she changed what she was planning to best fit the situation. I think the fact that they decided to have this really small, intimate family wedding in June so that they could experience that family occasion, just them, before having a much wider family celebration with friends, I think was really important. You know, emotions were running high, especially for Bryony's mum, and to, you know, be able to really balance that out was important. So don't be frightened to change what you're thinking of doing if your situation changes. You know, do adapt. I think what Bryony said also about not having to stress too much about what you're planning, the florist was able to help her a week before the wedding. The photographer was still be able to be booked in. Sometimes don't let the small things dominate what you're actually trying to do, as the whole point of your day is to celebrate your love with your closest friends and your dearest family. Don't let a colour scheme or not having exactly what you want get in the way of that. Focus on the big things. Don't stress about the small things. I think it was really lovely that Bryony had her child at the wedding. It was really nice to have Callum there. And that obviously is quite a common thing there that a lot of people do now. And it sounds as though they'd not even given it much thought. So don't stress about that either, I think, is the advice to take from that. And do check out what's on the high street for your bridesmaids' dresses, or indeed for your own dress. You know, Maids to Measure made the bridesmaid's dress that I wore at my friend Laura's wedding. They made Bryony's first wedding dress. There are things that you can wear that can adapt for different situations. So don't be obsessed with spending lots of money that you don't have when something on the high street or something in a small boutique will work. But I do hope that you enjoyed that, and we'll have another episode next week. So please do subscribe, please do rate and review, and I look forward to hearing you again, or you hearing me rather, next week. I'm Sarah Southern, your wedding guest extraordinaire. Please do take care.